The day wore on. Various Clachian officials and some of the Ankh-Morpork people were summoned to the tent. Vimes wandered close to it a few times and heard the sound of voices raised in dispute. Meanwhile, the armies dug in. Someone had already erected a crude signpost, its arms pointing to various soldiers' homes. Since these were all in part of Ankh-Morpork, the arms all pointed exactly the same way. He found most of the watch sitting out of the wind, while a wizened Clachian woman cooked quite a complicated meal over a small fire. They all seemed to be fully alive, with the usual slight question mark in the case of Red Shoe.
"Where have you been, Sergeant Colon?" said Vimes.
"Been sworn to secrecy about that, sir, by his lordship."
"Right."
Vimes didn't press the point. Getting information out of Colon was like getting water out of a flannel. It could wait.
"And Nobby?"
"Right here, sir."
The wizened woman saluted in a clash of bangles.
"That's you?"
"Yes, sir. Doing the dirty work as per the woman's role in life, sir, despite the fact that there is less senior watchman present, sir."
"Now then, Nobby," said Colon, "Cheery can't cook. We can't let Reg do it because bits fall into the pan, and Angua..."
"Doesn't do cookery," said Angua.
She was lying back on a rock with her eyes closed. The rock was the slumbering shape of Detritus.
"Anyway, you just started doing the cooking like you was expecting to have to do it," said Colon.
"Kebab, sir," said Nobby. "There's plenty."
"You certainly got a lot of food from somewhere," said Vimes.
"Clachian quartermaster, sir," said Nobby, grinning beneath his veil. "Used my sexual wiles on him, sir."
Vimes's kebab stopped halfway to his mouth and dripped lamb fat on his legs. He saw Angua's eyes slam open and stare in horror at the sky.
"I told him I'd take my clothes off and scream if he didn't give me some grub, sir."
"That'd scare the daylights out of me, sure enough," said Vimes.
He saw Angua breathe out again.
"Yeah, I reckon if I played my cards right, I could be one of them fatal famies," said Nobby. "I've only got a wink at a man and he runs a mile. Could be useful, that."
"I told him he could change back into his uniform, but he says he feels more comfortable like this,"
whispered Colon to Vimes.
"I'm getting a bit worried, to tell you the truth."
"I can't handle this," Vimes thought. "This isn't in the Book of Rules." How could I explain this?" he began.
"I don't want any of them innuendos," said Nobby. "It's a good idea to walk a mile in someone else's shoes. That's all I'm saying."
"Well, so long as it's just shoe."
"I've just been getting in touch with my softer side, all right? Seeing the other man's point of view, sort of thing. Even if he is a woman."
He looked at their faces and waved his hands vaguely.
"All right, all right. I'll put my uniform on after I've tied it up around a camp. Will that make you all happy?"
"Something smells nice."
Carrot ran up, bouncing his football. He'd stripped to his waist. The whistle bounced on its string around his neck.
"I've declared half-time," he said, sitting down, "so I've sent some of the lads into Gebra to get 4,000 oranges. Shortly, the combined Ankh-Morpork regimental bands will put on a display of countermarching while playing a selection of military favourites."
"Have they practised countermarching?" said Angua.
"I don't think so."
"Should be good, then."
"Carrot," said Vimes, "I don't wish to pry, but how in the middle of a desert did you find a football?"
And the voice in the back of his mind insisted, "You heard him die, you heard them all die, somewhere else."
"Oh, these days I carry a deflated one in my pack, sir. A very pacifying object, a football. Are you all right, sir?"
"Eh? What? Oh, yes, just a bit, tired. So, who's winning?"
Vimes patted his pockets and found his last cigar.
"It's broadly speaking a tie, sir. I had to send 473 men off, though. Clatch is now well ahead on fouls, I'm sorry to say."
"Sport as a substitute for war, eh?" said Vimes.
He rootled in the ashes of Nobby's fire and pulled out a half-consumed... well, it helps to think of it as a desert coal. Carrot gave him a solemn look.
"Yes, sir. No one's using weapons, and have you noticed how the Clachian army is getting smaller? Some of the chiefs from distant parts are taking their men away. They say there's no point in staying if there's not going to be a war. I don't think they really wanted to be here in any case, to tell you the truth. And I don't think it's going to be easy to get them to come back."
There was shouting behind them. Men were coming out of the tent, arguing. Lord Rust was among them. He looked around, talking to his companions. Then he spotted Vimes and rocketed furiously towards him.
"Vimes!"
Vimes looked up, hand halfway to his cigar.
"We would have won, you know," growled Rust. "We would have won. But we were betrayed on the brink of success."
Vimes stared at him.
"And it's your fault, Vimes. We'll be the laughingstock of Klatch. You know the value these people put on face, and we won't have any. Veterinari is finished, and so are you, and so is your stupid mongrel, cowardly watch."
"What do you say to that, Vimes, eh?" The watchmen sat like statues, waiting for Vimes to say something, or even move.
Vimes, eh?"
Rust sniffed.
"What's that smell?"
Vimes slowly shifted his gaze to his fingers. Smoke was rising. There was a faint sizzling. He stood up and brought his fingers up in front of Rust's face.
"Take it," he said. "That's just some trick. Take it," said Vimes.
Mesmerized, Rust licked his fingers and gingerly took the ember.
"It doesn't hurt?"
"Yes, it does," said Vimes.
"In fact, it...
Rust jumped back, dropped the ember, and sucked his blistered fingers.
"The trick is not to mind that it hurts," said Vimes. "Now go away." "You won't last long," Rust sneered. "You wait until we're back in the city. You just wait."
He strode off, holding his stricken hand. Vimes went back and sat down by the fire. After a while, he said,
"Where's he gone now?"
"Back to the line, sir. I think he's ordering the men home."
"Can he see us?"
"No."
"You sure?"
"There's too many people in the way, sir."
"You're quite sure?"
"Not unless he can see through camels, sir."
"Good."
Vimes stuck his fingers in his mouth. Sweat was pouring down his face.
"Damn, damn, damn. Has anyone got any cold water?"
Captain Jenkins had got his ship afloat again. It had taken a lot of digging and some careful work with bulks of timber and the assistance of a Klatchian captain who had decided not to let patriotism stand in the way of profit. He and his crew were resting on the shore when a greeting ran out from over them. He squinted into the sun.
That can't be Vimes, can it?"
The crew stared.
"Let's get aboard right now."
A figure started down the face of the dune. It moved very fast, much faster than a man could run on the shifting sand, and moved in a zigzag fashion. As it drew nearer, it turned out to be a man standing on a shield. It slid to a halt a few feet away from the astonished Jenkins.
"Good of you to wait, Captain," said Carrot. "Very many thanks. The others will be down in a minute."
Jenkins looked back to the top of the dune. There were other darker figures there now.
"Those are dregs," he shouted.
"Oh, yes, lovely people. Have you met them at all?" Jenkins stared at Carrot.
"Did you win?" he said.
"Oh, yes, on penalties in the end." Green-blue light filtered through the tiny windows of the boat. Lord Vetinari pulled the steering levers until he was pretty certain that they were heading towards a suitable ship, and said,
"What is it I can smell, Sergeant Colon?"
"It's Betty, Nobby, sir," said Colon, pedalling industriously.
"Corporal Nobbs?"
Nobby almost blushed.
"I bought a bottle of scent, sir, for my young lady."
Lord Vetinari coughed.
"What exactly do you mean by your young lady?"
he said.
"Well, but when I get one," said Nobby.
"Ah."
Even Lord Vetinari sounded relieved.
"On account of I expect I shall now, me having fully explored my sexual nature and now feeling fully comfortable with myself,"
said Nobby.
"You feel comfortable with yourself?"
"Yes, sir,"
said Nobby happily.
"And when you find this lucky lady, you will give her this bottle of... it's called Casbar Nights, sir."
"Of course.
Very floral, isn't it?"
"Yes, sir. That's because of the jasmine and rare ungulates in it, sir.
And yet at the same time, curiously penetrative."
Nobby grinned.
"Good value for money, sir. A little goes a long way. Not far enough, possibly."
But Nobby rusted even irony.
"I got it in the same shop that Sarge got the hump, sir."
"Ah, yes."
There wasn't very much space in the boat, and most of it was taken up with Sergeant Colon's souvenirs. He'd been allowed a brief shopping expedition to take home something for the wife, sir, otherwise I'll never hear the last of it.
"And Mrs. Colon will like a stuffed camel hump, will she, Sergeant?"
said the patrician doubtfully.
"Yes, sir.
She can put things on it, sir. And the set of nested brass tables? To put things on, sir. And the...
There was a clanking.
Set of goat bells, ornamental coffee pot, miniature camel saddle, and this strange glass tube with little bands of different coloured sand in it. What are these for? Conversation pieces, sir.
You mean people will say things like, what are they for, do you? Sergeant Colan looked pleased with himself.
See, sir, we're talking about him already.
Remarkable. Sergeant Colan coughed and indicated with a tilt of his head the hunched figure of Leonard, who was sitting in the stern with his head in his hands.
He's a bit quiet, sir, he whispered. Can't seem to get a word out of him.
He has a lot on his mind, said the patrician. The watchman pedalled onwards for a while, but the close confines of the boat encouraged a confidentiality that would never have been found on land.
"Sorry to hear that you're getting the sack, sir,"
said Colan.
"Really?" said Lord Vetinari. "You'd definitely get my vote if we had elections."
"Capital.
I think people want the thumbscrew of firm government myself."
"Good.
Your predecessor, Lord Snapcase, now he was mental. But like I've always said, people know where they stand with Lord Vetinari."
"Well done. They might not like where they're standing, of course." Lord Vetinari looked up. They were under a boat now, and it seemed to be going in the right direction. He steered the boat until he heard the thunk of hull hitting hull, and gave the auger a few turns.
"Am I being sacked, Sergeant?" he said, sitting back. "Well, I heard Lord Rust's people say that if you ratify, said Lord Vetinari. "Yeah, if you ratify that surrender next week, they'll get you exiled, sir."
"A week is a long time in politics, Sergeant." Colan's face widened in what he thought of as a knowing grin. He tapped the side of his nose.
"Ah-ha! Politics," he said. "Ah-ha! You should have said. Yeah, they'll laugh at the other foot then, eh?" said Nobby. "Got some secret plan, I'll be bound," said Colan. "You know where the chicken is, all right.
I can see that there's no fooling such skilled observers of the carnival that is life," said Lord Vetinari.
"Yes, indeed, there is something I intend to do."
He adjusted the position of the camel hump poof, which in fact smelled of goat and was beginning to leak sand, and lay back.
"I am going to do nothing. Wake me up if anything interesting happens."
Nautical things happened. The wind spun about so much that a weathercock might as well be harnessed to grinding corn. At one point there was a fall of anchovies. And Commander Vimes tried to sleep. Jenkins showed him a hammock, and Vimes realized that this was another sheep's eyeball. No one could possibly sleep in something like that. Sailors probably kept them up for show and had real beds tucked away somewhere. He tried to make himself comfortable in the hold and dozed while the others talked in the corner. They were very politely keeping out of his way.
"Oh, Chip wouldn't give the whole thing away, would he? What were we fighting for?"
"He'll have a hard job hanging on to the job after this, that's for sure. It's dragging the good name of Ankh-Morpork into the mud, like Mr. Vimes said."
"For Ankh-Morpork, mud is up."
That was Angua.
"On the other hand, everyone is still breathing."
That was Detritus.
"That's a vitalist remark."
"Sorry, Reg. What are you scratching for?"
"I think I picked up a filthy foreign disease."
"Sorry?" Angua again.
"What can a zombie catch?" "Don't like to say."
"You're talking to someone who knows every brand of flea powder they sell in Ankh-Morpork, Reg."
"Oh, if you must know, mice, miss, it's shameful. I keep myself clean, but they just find a way. Have you tried everything, excepting ferrets?"
"If his lordship goes, who'll take over?"
That was Cheery.
"Lord Rust?"
"He'd last 5 minutes.
Maybe the guilds will get together and..."
"They'd fight like..." "Ferrets," said Reg. "The cure's worse than the disease."
"Cheer up. There'll still be a watch."
That was Carrot.
"Yes, but Mr. Vimes'll be out on his ear, 'cause of politics."
Vimes decided to keep his eyes closed. A silent crowd was waiting on the quayside when the ship finally docked. They watched Vimes and his men walk down the gangway. There were one or two coughs, and then someone called out,
Say it ain't so, Mr. Vimes.
At the foot of the gangplank, Constable Dawful saluted stiffly.
Lord Rust's ship got in this morning, sir,
the golem said. Anyone seen Vetinari?
No, sir.
Afraid to show his face, someone shouted.
Lord Rust said you were to do your duty, damn you, said Dawful.
Golems had a certain literalness of speech. He handed Vimes a sheet of paper. Vimes grabbed it and read the first few lines. What's this, emergency council? And this, treason against Vetinari? I'm not carrying this out. Can I see, sir? Said Carrot. It was Angua who noticed the wave, while the others were staring at the warrant. Even in human form, a werewolf's ears are pretty sensitive. She wandered back to the quayside and looked downriver. A wall of white water a few feet high was running up the Ankh. As it passed, boats were lifted and rocked. It sloshed by her, sucking at the quay and making Jenkins's boat dance for a moment. There was a crash of crockery somewhere aboard. Then it was gone, a line of surf heading towards the next bridge. For a moment the air smelled not of the Ankh's eau de latrine, but of sea winds and salt. Jenkins appeared out of his cabin and looked over the side.
What was that? The tide changing? Angua called up.
We came up on the tide, said Jenkins. Beats me. One of those phenomena, I expect.
Angua went back to the group. Vimes was already red in the face.
It has been signed by quite a lot of the major guilds, sir, Carrot was saying. In fact, they're all here except the beggars and the seamstresses.
Really? Well, piss on them. Who are they to give me an order like that?
Angua saw the look of pain cross Carrot's face.
Someone has to give us orders, sir, in a general sort of way. We aren't supposed to make up our own. That's sort of, the point.
Yes, but not like.
And I suppose they represent the will of the people.
That bunch? Don't give me that rubbish. We'd have been slaughtered if we'd fought, and then we'd be in just the same position as we...
This does look legal, sir.
It's ridiculous.
It's not as if we are accusing him, sir. We just have to make sure he turns up at the rat's chamber. Look, sir, you've had a very trying time, but arrest Vetinari? I can't.
Vimes stopped, because his ears had caught up, and because that was the point, wasn't it? If you could arrest anyone, then that's what you had to do. You couldn't turn round and say, but not him. Ahmed would snigger. Old Stoneface would turn in all five of his graves.
I can, can't I? He said sadly. Oh, all right. Put out a description, Dawful.
That will not be necessary, sir.
The crowds moved aside as Lord Vetinari walked along the quay, with Nobby and Colon behind him. At least, if it wasn't Sergeant Colon, it was a very strangely deformed camel.
I think I caught quite a lot of that, Commander, said Lord Vetinari. Please do your duty.
All you got to do is go to the palace, sir. Let's...
You're not going to handcuff me?
Vimes's mouth dropped open.
Why should I do that?
Treason is very nearly the ultimate crime, Sir Samuel. I think I should demand handcuffs.
All right, if you insist.
Vimes nodded at Dawful.
Cuff him, then.
You haven't any shackles, by any chance, said Lord Vetinari, as Dawful produced a pair of handcuffs. We may as well do this thing properly.
No, we don't have any shackles.
I was only trying to help, Sir Samuel. Shall we be going?
The crowd weren't jeering. That was almost frightening. They were just waiting, like an audience watching to see how the trick was going to be done. They parted again as the patrician headed towards the centre of the city. He stopped and turned.
What was the other thing? Oh, yes. I don't have to be dragged on a hurdle, do I?
Only if you're actually executed, my lord, said Carrot cheerfully. Traditionally, traitors are dragged to their place of execution on a hurdle, and then you're hung, drawn, and quartered. Carrot looked embarrassed. I know about the hanging and quartering, but I'm not sure how you're drawn, sir.
Are you any good with a pencil, Captain? Said Lord Vetinari innocently.
No, he's not, said Vimes.
Do you actually have a hurdle?
No, snapped Vimes.
No? Well, I believe there's a sports equipment shop in Shear Street, just in case, Sir Samuel.
A figure walked across the trampled sand near Gebra and paused when a voice very near ground level said hopefully,
"Bingley, bingley, beep."
The disorganizer felt itself being picked up.
"What kind of a thing are you?"
"I am the disorganizer Mark II, with many handy, hard-to-use features. Insert name here."
"Such as?"
Even the disorganizer's tiny mind felt slightly uneasy. The voice it was speaking to didn't sound right.
"I know what time it is everywhere,"
it ventured.
"So do I."
I can maintain an up-to-the-minute contacts directory."
The disorganizer felt movements that suggested the new owner had mounted a horse.
"Really? I have a great many contacts."
"There you are, then,"
said the demon, trying to hold on to its rapidly draining enthusiasm.
"So I make a note of them, and when you want to contact them again..."
"That is generally not necessary. Mostly, they stay contacted."
"Well, do you have many appointments?"
There were hoofbeats, and then no sound but rushing wind.
"More than you could possibly imagine. No, I think perhaps your talents could be better employed elsewhere."
There was more rushing wind and then a splash. The rat's chamber was crowded. Guild leaders were entitled to be there, but there were plenty of other people who considered that they had a right to be in at the death, too. There were even some of the senior wizards. Everyone wanted to be able to say to their grandchildren, "I was there." Although, of course, wizards aren't allowed to, because they're not supposed to have grandchildren.
"I feel certain I ought to be wearing more chains," said Vetinari as they paused in the doorway and looked at the assembled crowd.
"Are you taking this seriously, sir?" said Vimes.
"Incredibly seriously, Commander, I assure you. But if by some chance I survive, I authorize you to buy some shackles. We must learn to do this sort of thing properly." "I shall keep them handy, I assure you."
"Good."
The patrician nodded at Lord Rust, who was flanked by Mr. Boggis and Lord Downey.
"Good morning," he said.
"Can we make this quick? Going to be a busy day." "It pleases you to continue to make Ankh-Morpork a laughingstock,"
Rust began. His glance flicked to Vimes for a moment and wrote him out of the universe.
"This is not a formal trial, Lord Vetinari. It is an arraignment so that the charges may be known. Mr. Slant tells me that it will be many weeks before a full trial can be mounted."
"Expensive weeks, no doubt. Shall we get on with it?"
said Vetinari.
"Mr. Slant will read the charges," said Rust. "But in a nutshell, as you are well aware, Havelock, you are charged with treason. You surrendered most ignobly."
"But I did not."
"And quite illegally waived all rights to our sovereignty of the country known as Leshp."
"But there is no such place."
Lord Rust paused.
"Are you quite sane, sir?"
"The surrender terms were to be ratified on the island of Leshp, Lord Rust. There is no such place."
"We passed it on the way here, man."
"Has anyone looked recently?"
Angua tapped Vimes on the shoulder.
"A strange wave came up the river just after we arrived, sir."
There was some urgent conversation among the wizards, and Arch-Chancellor Ridcully stood up.
There seems to be a bit of a problem, your lordship. The dean says it really isn't there."
"It's an island. Are you suggesting someone stolen it? Are you sure you know where it is, man?"
"We do know where it is, and it isn't there. There's just a lot of seaweed and wreckage,"
said the dean coldly. He stood up, holding a small crystal ball in his hands.
"We've been watching it most evenings, for the fights, you know. Of course, the picture is pretty bad at this distance."
Rust stared at him, but the dean was too large to be written out of the scene.
"But an entire island can't just vanish,"
said Rust.
"In theory, they can't just appear either, my lord, but this one did."
"Perhaps it's sunk again," said Carrot.
Now Rust glared at Vetinari.
"Did you know about this?"
he demanded.
"How could I know something like that?"
Vimes watched the faces around the room.
"You do know something about this,"
said Rust.
He glanced towards Mr. Slant, who was leafing hurriedly through a large volume.
"All I know, my lord, is that Prince Kadram has, at a politically dangerous time for him, given up a huge military advantage in exchange for an island which seems to have sunk under the sea," said Lord Vetinari. "The Clatchians are a proud people. I wonder what they will think."
And Vimes thought about General Ashal, standing beside Prince Kadram's throne. "Clatchians like successful leaders," he thought. "I wonder what happens to the unsuccessful ones. I mean, look at what we do when we think..." Someone nudged him.
"Sass, sir," said Nobby. "They said they didn't have any hurdles, but they'd do a ping-pong table for $10. There's a small trampoline we could drag him on, but Sarge thinks that'd be a bit ridiculous."
Vimes walked out of the room, dragging Nobby with him, and pushed the little man against the wall.
"Where did you get to with Vetinari, Corporal? And remember, I know when you tell me lies, your lips move."
We just went on a little voyage, sir. He said I wasn't to say we went under the island, sir."
"So you..." "Under, Leshp?"
"No, sir, we didn't go down there.
Stinking hole it was, too. Stunk of rotten eggs. The whole bloody cave. And as big as the city, believe me."
"I bet you're glad you didn't go, then." Nobby looked relieved.
"That's right, sir."
Vimes sniffed.
"Are you using some kind of aftershave?" He corrected himself. "Some kind of instead of shave, Nobby?"
"No, sir."
"Something smells of fermented flowers."
"Oh, it's just a souvenir I picked up in foreign parts, sir. It kind of lingers, if you know what I mean."
Vimes shrugged and went back into the rat's chamber.
"And I resent most strongly the suggestion that I would have negotiated with His Highness in the knowledge that..." "Ah, Sir Samuel, the keys to the handcuffs, please."
"You knew! You knew all the time!"
Rust shouted.
"Is Lord Vetinari charged with anything?" said Vimes.
Mr. Slant was scrabbling through another volume. He looked quite flustered for a zombie. His grey-green shade was distinctly greener.
"Not as such," he muttered.
"But he will be," said Lord Rust. "Well, when you find out what it is, you be sure and let me know, and I'll go and arrest him for it,"
said Vimes, unlocking the handcuffs. He was aware of cheering outside. Nankh stayed secret very long in Ankh Morpork. The damn island wasn't there anymore, and somehow it had all worked out. He met Vetinari's eyes.
"Piece of luck for you, eh?" he said. "Oh, there's always a chicken, Sir Samuel, if you look hard enough." Thank you.